sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblock Variety Cast, episode 22. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
I got 6 hours of sleep last night.
Woohoo!
In a row.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I almost got that. I don't even have a child.
You have a dog.
Yeah, but she... Actually, last night she was totally in bed before I was. She's like, all right, guys, it's bedtime. What is the matter with you people?
Yeah, Casey will go and lay down in her crate, and then she'll whine that we haven't closed the crate and put a cover over her. She's like a bird. We have to cover her up or she won't sleep.
Oh, that's funny. One of the funnier ones is if I go to bed early, then the dog will sit in the hallway and stare at my wife. She'll go over to my wife and she'll muzzle punch my wife. Like, all right, he's in bed. You go to bed now. Time's on you. Get out of here. Come on.
Okay.
Well, the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report, 39.1 dog walking miles. And nothing really new, except that I had to abandon my size 34 pants because I don't fit in them anymore. After Thanksgiving and Christmas, I only fit in the 36 pants.
Well, I still only fit in my 36 pants, but I'm week 7 of Couch to 5K, which means that at this point, there's no breaks in the running. So I'm now running 2.5 miles straight through with no pauses and no like walking in the middle. And ouch, that hurts. So for you guys who, you know, maybe are taking the advice that we gave a couple of weeks ago to do the Couch to 5K, the first 2 weeks, you want to die. The next 4 weeks is kind of okay. And then week 7, you want to die again.
Well, now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Today, Aaron's going to talk about water bottles. So, Aaron, I was wandering through one of those sports and camping stores and kind of eyeballing some of this stuff that might be useful for prepping. And they got like 14 different kinds of water bottles. What's the best kind of water bottle for preppers?
Well, Sean, water bottles can have a lot of utility outside of just holding water, provided you get the right kind. And in my experience, you can get a good one from between $15 and $25, mostly depending on the brand name. Now, first of all, you want one that's at least 24 ounces. But go with the largest one you're comfortable with, because the more water you can hold, the better. Second, get one with a wide mouth. This allows you to do more with the bottle. You can put ice cubes down it for a cold drink. If you're trying to get water from a stream, the larger opening makes it easier, and a wide mouth also makes it easier to clean. And if you just plan on putting the bottle into your bug-out bag, you can use it to store items, and with a larger opening, it's a lot easier to get things in and out without getting stuck. Now, third, it should be either stainless steel or titanium. They're strong, they don't weigh really any more than the plastic bottles, and you don't need to worry about anything leaching into the water. And finally, they need to be unpainted, unlined, and of a single wall design. I think this is the most important point here, because this allows you to boil water directly inside the bottle if you're in a survival situation. Now, it's worth noting that if you lack a portable stove, the best way to boil water inside a bottle is not to put the bottle directly onto the fire, because if the fire gets too hot, it can potentially warp the bottle, warp the threads, prevent the lid from screwing back on, and then you're in trouble. Instead, what you should do is put the bottle in the hot ashes just right next to the fire, snuggle it up, and then boil it for about 10 minutes or less if you've got one of those water pasteurization indicators that I talked about last year.
You know, you said there's a couple of uses for it. It's a water bottle. It just carries water. What else am I going to do with a water bottle?
Well, in addition to boiling water with it and using it as a survival kit container, you can, well, when it's filled with water, you can use it as a rolling pin. I understand that that's a little bit silly. How many times are you going to need a rolling pin in the wilderness? But it's a use people haven't thought of. You can wrap 10 feet or more of paracord around the bottle. Not only will that enhance the grip, and help insulate the contents, but you've now got paracord storage. And one thing that I've seen in a lot of the survival shows about Alaska, what these folks will do is they will wrap fishing line around the bottle, and then they use the bottle as a reel. And from there, they can actually do survival fishing without packing an actual fishing pole.
Now, you've got a video of this in the show notes, and I gotta say, I looked at that, and that is really cool. It's kind of hard to describe how they do it, but you gotta see the video.
Yeah, it's really cool. And if you've got a survival fishing kit that goes with you, that's great. Or if you really need the fishing line, like I mentioned when I talked about paracord, you can just pull out one of the strands and use that. So, you know, paracord wrapped around the bottle really gives you a whole lot of options.
Well, I got to level with you, Aaron. I always have a water bottle with me. For the whole time I've been doing my job, you know, I spend a lot of time in the car. I've carried a bottle of water with me, and not, you know, I don't go out and buy a bottle of water. I just take tap water, fill up my liter container, and I always have it. And I really couldn't imagine life without it anymore because it's right there. I always have something to drink, and I think everybody should do the same.
I agree.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. Felons behaving badly. Raleigh teen charged with shooting into Zebulon home. Car theft. Dateline Zebulon, a Raleigh 17-year-old who began 2 years probation December 1 for car theft, was arrested by Zebulon police after a foot chase before dawn Saturday and charged with firing a stolen .45 caliber handgun into a home and having a stolen car.
Oh, well, he's in trouble now for violating that probation.
Yeah, seriously. Suspect of 6617 Terrence Park in Raleigh,
stop by and say hi,
was arrested at 5:30 a.m. on the 600 block of West Gannon Avenue, a little over half a mile from where shots were fired into the home on Harmonica Drive, records show. Police charged that they had to chase suspect on foot after he stopped a car he was driving. Arrest warrants also charged the suspect with robbery with a dangerous weapon, saying he had stolen the car, conspiring with two other people to steal it, misdemeanor possession of a handgun by a minor, possession by a felon, and possession of a stolen weapon. The .45 was stolen in Raleigh in 2012 from a Progress Energy employee, Raleigh police said. Suspect became a felon on December 1 when he was given a suspended sentence and put on 2 years probation after being convicted of stealing a car in September, state records showed. Suspect was also put on probation in May 2014 after being convicted of misdemeanor theft in March, the records showed. They did not indicate how long that probation was. Police also charged suspect with possession of a different stolen car on December 18th.
How many times are we going to put this guy on probation?
Yeah. See, that was the thing that really worried me about this, is 3/31/2014, larceny, misdemeanor class 1, suspended sentence.
Oh.
9/18/2014, larceny of a motor vehicle, felony, class H, suspended sentence. When did they violate his probation? If they did have violated him and put him in jail, that would solve the whole problem, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have...
You'd think?
Yeah. I mean, really what they're teaching him is, yeah, we're going to put you in jail for like 6 hours.
Yeah. Hey, look, everybody needs a 37th chance.
Yeah.
Well, this week in Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki talks about North Korea. So, Nikki, North Korea has been in the news recently because they've been blamed for hacking Sony. Now, why is this starving, backwards little country, led by a chubby, half-crazed dictator with delusions of adequacy, of any importance at all to the United States?
Well, you are right. Some will have to wonder why this is in any way relevant to us. Yes, North Korea is guilty of some of the most egregious human rights violations. As a matter of fact, organizations such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International and the South Korean government, all of those say the same thing. There's starvation. There are as many as 200,000 North Koreans that live in prison camps and that are basically forced into slave labor. They're dying of malnutrition, and only because their politics are quote-unquote wrong, according to their government.
Yeah, but why should we care?
Well, for one, North Korea's regime actually gets much of its income by exporting counterfeit pharmaceuticals such as Viagra, meth, counterfeit cigarettes, and fake U.S. currency, and also by selling small arms and missile parts to terrorist groups and rogue nations. You know, if North Korea just stuck to its own thing and didn't impact the rest of the world with its dangerous fraudulent drugs and weapons exports to terrorists, we could honestly say, okay, it's really, really messed up over there, but it's none of our business. I would also submit that that would not be politically tenable, that with the 24-hour news cycle that influences people's sympathies and emotions, it would probably not work. We would probably wind up getting involved in some way or other because the population would demand it. But let's put that aside for a moment. Not only does North Korea arm rogue groups and terrorists, and not only is it a source of dangerous false drugs, I mean, people actually die from contaminated, mislabeled, adulterated Viagra. I've talked to folks at USDA who say the same thing. It's actually dangerous. But the Chinese also inject counterfeit U.S. currency into the international financial system. What they'll do is they'll have North Korean officials travel to China. The Chinese will pay North Korean government officials who travel there, like, you know, $60-$70 for these fake $100 bills. And then those bills are put into circulation. So while we look at North Korea and we say there's nobody that's going to accept a counterfeit $100 bill from a North Korean, they might accept it from some Chinese businessman or some other person who is traveling around. But that's not all. So as backwards as North Korea is, they're pretty advanced when it comes to cyber warfare. Press reports say that North Korea pours a lot of resources into its cyber warfare cell. It's called Bureau 121, and it's apparently run by the North Korean General Bureau of Reconnaissance, its spy agency, its infrastructure. Military hackers are some of the most talented and rewarded people in North Korea. They're handpicked, they're trained at the age of 17, they're thrown into these military colleges or the University of Automation, which is apparently this big building that's surrounded by barbed wire and is top secret kind of thing. According to a defector who spoke with Reuters, Bureau 121 is actually comprised of about 1,800 cyber warriors, and it's considered the elite of the North Korean military. In comparison, the United States, which is a country much, much larger than North Korea, once we actually stand up for real, stand up cybercom, we'll probably have about 6,000 personnel. So they've got a lot of resources dedicated to cyber warfare. According to our officials, cyber warfare is the next frontier, so to speak. The Pentagon considers it a priority given the threats to our infrastructure by hackers who are both profit seekers in the private realm, but also are paid by foreign governments to attack the United States. And North Korea spends about a third of its government budget on defense. That's a significant amount. That's 33% compared to less than 4% of GDP that the United States spends on defense and less than 2% of GDP on the average most NATO nations spend on defense. They pay their hackers a lot of money and they treat them like gold, especially compared to other citizens, and they give them housing and they give them good salaries, and you know, they don't have to eat other human beings to survive. That's a biggie right there. So you can tell just how important cyber is to North Korea. And for what? I mean, it's easy to say that Kim is just crazy, which he is, but there's got to be something more to it than that. Their economy is trash, the people are starving, their military capabilities, for the most part, are not a match for the West, and they're not even close. But it appears that North Korea doesn't care about any of that. It wants to be in the forefront of everybody's mind. It wants to stand tall. It wants to show itself to be this world power in its own right. It doesn't want to be ignored. Even if it's universally reviled, even if everybody hates the regime, in the leadership's eyes, it's better to be significant than to be ignored. And I think this is what it's all about. That makes it a significant threat. While some claim that North Korea's role in the Sony hack is questionable, I can tell you the U.S. government isn't going to give up all of its evidence against North Korea to tip its hand. The fact of the matter is that North Korea hacked Sony, which to us might not seem a big deal. It's just a bunch of entertainment, right? But it's a show of force. And it keeps North Korea relevant. It may sound odd, but it's 100% true. It doesn't matter if it's just Sony, if it's a bunch of studio execs talking about random stuff. It keeps North Korea relevant and in the news. And to Kim and to that entire leadership, that is much better than not being kept in the news at all.
All right, Nikki, it was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com. Strange laws. You know, with me coming to Tennessee for this NRA convention, I'm a little bit worried about what the laws say in Tennessee, and I definitely do not want to go to jail. What do I need to know coming to the NRA convention in order to keep myself out of jail?
Well, as you know, being a firearms enthusiast, everybody always asks me about the laws here in Tennessee, even people who live here, even though I'm not a lawyer. So I figured I would share with you and the rest of our listeners things that they need to know about little quirks in the law or, you know, things like that. So first off, reciprocity. If you have a carry permit, it's good here.
That's good. That's so universal reciprocity.
It's universal reciprocity as long as you're permit is facially valid. So basically, as long as you show them something that looks like a carry permit, then they will, you know, assume that that's a valid carry permit.
Okay.
So that's thing number one. So number two, open carry of pistols is allowed with a permit. So you can open carry your pistols, but you have to have a carry permit to open carry.
Okay.
You cannot open carry rifles or concealed carry rifles. In fact, and we talked about this way early in the show, yeah. It's a handgun carry permit.
Right.
And so handguns also have a length of less than 12 inches. So you can't, you know, carry a 14-inch AR pistol because that's not an AR pistol in this state. That's a firearm.
Well, it might be a pistol, but it's not a handgun.
That's, yes, yes. So long guns in vehicles. If you have a carry permit, you can carry a long gun in your vehicle, cruiser ready. And we do specifically in the law allow you to deploy that for self-defense or defense of others.
Okay, cool.
And cruiser ready, of course, is magazine loaded, but nothing in the chamber.
Okay. Is there any requirement on the safety being on?
No, there is no safety requirement.
Okay.
Just not in the chamber.
All right.
Now, carrying weapons on school property, you probably know.
Yeah, why would anybody do that?
Right, right.
I mean, I know why we would do that, but I mean, we know it's illegal, so.
Right.
So big deal. I'm not going on a school campus.
Well, you may think so, but the way that our law is written, any property that is owned or operated by a school also counts. Now, Vanderbilt University is almost in downtown Nashville. It's in an area called West End. And if you're going to the NRA convention, you may find yourself going to West End for lunch. Here's the problem. Vanderbilt University owns a large portion of retail space that's in West End. Now, for 2 years, I worked near West End. And occasionally, I would go to lunch, and I would carry my pistol with me. And I did that for about 2 years, until the day that I saw Vanderbilt police officers taking a police report from a restaurant that had gotten robbed. And I said to myself, self, why is the Vanderbilt Police Department responding to this crime? And then I looked it up. I was on school property. Now, this is a little bit hazy because they're supposed to post that it's school property. But recently we had a school board member who was arrested for carrying a firearm onto school board property that was not labeled as such. So just be aware of that. Now, possession of handgun while under the influence. You cannot have any alcohol in your system and also be in possession of a handgun. That also means you can't leave the gun in the car and then go in and have a beer with dinner to a restaurant.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one that gets people. Now, a couple of years ago, the guy who wrote the law, the legislator who wrote the law, was arrested for violating this particular law. He had no idea that he was actually violating the law because he put his pistol, he's a former police officer, he put his pistol in the glove box, locked the glove box, went and had a beer, got out. We think somebody actually was there and saw him drinking and said, oh, hey, I know that guy, and I know that he wrote this law, and I know he's a big carry proponent, so I bet he has a gun. So they called the cops and said that he was a drunk driver. He blew like a .04 or something like that, so it wasn't even enough really to do anything, but he pled to possession of a firearm under the influence. So don't do that. Particularly don't open carry while you're, and then go order a beer. That's bad. They'll probably call the cops on you. 1359 is your prohibition at certain meetings posting notice. Our law that's about posted properties is 3917-1359. It's the posting notice. There's two things that are legally binding. Number one is the gunbuster sign. That is a legally binding sign.
Okay, so we're talking like gun in a circle with a slash, legally binding.
Yes, that is a legally binding sign. You cannot carry there. It's a $500 fine. It's a Class B misdemeanor. And interestingly enough, that is only applied to carry permit holders. It's only illegal for a carry permit holder to violate that sign.
Okay, let me roll my eyes just a little bit harder so all the listeners at home can hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the gunbuster sign is legal, and then they can actually put up a sign that has words on it, and it's very specific language. It has to mention the Tennessee Code annotated 3917-1359. It has to tell you that.
Okay, but for us, you know, we're going to the NRA convention. If we see a sign that that says you can't carry a gun, just take it for real. Whether it turns out not to be, you know, don't worry about it. Just go someplace else.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you do happen to go someplace and you see one of these signs, you can go ahead and put it back in your car. If they're posted at the parking lot, we have a separate law that says if you're a carry permit holder and the parking lot is posted, you can still carry in the parking lot in the car, but you have to take it out in the car and nobody can see you.
Okay.
Public parks, playgrounds, civic centers, and other public recreational buildings, if they are posted, then generally they're no-go.
Okay.
Metro parks are still prohibited.
Okay, so all of us out-of-state people, if we see a sign that says, don't carry, there might be loopholes in the law, but we should just leave that to the locals to sort out, and the rest of us just, if we see the sign, go somewhere else.
So with parks, state parks, they might still be posted, but the posting doesn't matter. With local parks, they don't even have to be posted. If you go to a local park, if you go to a metro park, then that's going to be a crime. It's real dumb.
Yeah. We'll leave that to you guys to sort out. We'll just walk the other way.
Let me just add, while open carry is legal here, there's so many places that carrying a gun may or may not be legal that I would just advise against that. Now, if we've got some people who want to do like an open carry thing, just leave us a comment here and I'll see if we can get together and I can do like a chaperoned open carry.
Okay, cool. Well, Miguel wants to talk about that fun and exciting thing that's taken the internet by storm. The open carry Tarrant County members in Texas getting into a heated confrontation with a Texas legislator.
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Hey, did you see the video of the open carry advocates in the Texas legislature?
Yeah, I did see that. I don't see why everybody's so up in arms about it.
You don't?
No, of course not. That looked like a fairly regular confrontational sort of meeting. I think there was probably a lot better ways to deal with it, but what I really don't see is the, oh my God, outrage that the anti-gunners are putting on it.
Well, but that is the point. Okay, yeah, it might not be in a typical gameship within the legislature, but that's not what people see every day. And what these people did was stupid. They let themselves be led by the nose, and they're acting like a bunch of little 6 years old.
I watched that. That was the thing that I took away from this more than anything else, is watching that legislator tweak them repeatedly over and over and over again in order to ramp up their reaction and to allow themselves to be jacked that way and to react that way. That was just dumb.
Just because you can do it, it doesn't necessarily mean you are good at it or you should do it.
That's definitely true.
We're having that problem with a lot of people now getting into the gun rights, especially, and I'm sorry to say, the open carry people in Texas.
Okay, we need to be clear. This was not open carry Texas. This was open carry Tarrant County.
Even CJ Grisham, which is not the smartest cook in the freaking world regarding PR, said that they were stupid in the way they approached things. It tells you something, you know? But the thing is, they let themselves be played. You know the principle of the Caesar's wife?
Yes, and I don't believe it.
Okay, the Caesar's wife not only has to be chased, but has to be even give the image of being chased all the time. In the gun community, we are set to that standard. It's unfair.
I don't believe in that standard, and I'm not going to allow anybody to force me to live up to that standard. I'm a normal human being, and they're just going to have to deal with that. That being said, don't be an idiot if you can help it.
Well, and that is the problem. When we are dealing with the media, remember, we are not going to change the minds of the people that are set, you know, hard on anti-gun, period. We cannot do that. But when we engage them, it's for the benefit of the people that are undecided and they have the capacity to vote. So if we act in a manner that they see, no matter how much they bait us, how much they call us names, well, we don't react. We react above that. We actually take a higher moral standard. We look better. People will consider what we have to say. But all of a sudden, you know, like we saw in the video, they get baited. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. What the hell are you? 6 years old in the back of the station wagon?
Right. But by the same token, they were deliberately touching them, provoking them. You're not allowed to touch people.
So freaking what? Rise above it. Again, it's not what they can do to you, and then you're supposed to react this way because, you know, things are equal. No, we're not equal. I'm sorry. We're supposed to behave in at a higher moral ground.
I'm not sure that really is a helpful way to think of things. One of the things being involved in activism here in North Carolina, mm-hmm. I found, is that I always thought, hey, if we act like nice people, they will treat us like nice people. And that's not the reality of politics. The reality of politics is pain and power.
Exactly.
You cause them pain, they will stop doing that. Now, you have to recognize who you can harm and who you can't. The particular person they were screwing with, there was no way they could harm this man, no matter what they did to him, because he ran unopposed in the general election, he ran unopposed in the primary, and he won his previous general election 60-40 in 2012.
Something like that, yeah.
The guy is untouchable. So it was a waste of time to deal with him.
It goes back to my original point. Not because you can do it, you're supposed to do it.
Know yourself and know your opponent, and then you'll have victory. Well, they didn't know the opponent, and they obviously didn't know themselves because they were allowing themselves to react to stupid things.
They wasted resources. They wasted time, and not only that. And then, come on, for the love of God, you tape the whole issue. This is not that somebody from the congressional office, tape it. It was one of them who then went ahead and posted on Facebook. And then went ahead and let everybody in God's green earth see it. How stupid can you be? Again, I don't care about, I mean, listen, you're talking about hurting. Okay, the other side. The way you can, what's the best way you can hurt him? You void him out of office.
Yep, which isn't going to happen in this case.
But this case is going to affect other cases. It's going to affect other people. Now they're going to go try to talk to another legislature, and the guy's going to recoil because, well, why, you guys going to come here to threaten me? And if they say something, his or her representative say something, and he's got to point out to the video. Is going to say, look, these morons are aggressive. And the regular people are going to go and see just the 10-second thing on the news. And they're going to make the decision that the open carry activists in general in Texas are a bunch of freaking morons with guns that cannot be allowed to roam free on the streets. That is the problem. Those who still have the majority of the votes, those that have not made a decision, they can support either one way or the other, are going to make that decision based on stupidity, on don't touch me. I'm stepping my foot on the door so you cannot close it. That is ridiculous behavior. They cannot be accepted because it hurts us. The press is not going to give us a fair shake. The press is not going to say the things you said. You know, oh, this is normal. This is things that happen. No, they're going to make a mincemeat out of us because of that stupidity. Whether we like it or not, whether it's fair or not, we are going to get the short end of the stick.
Right. We also can't be too sensitive to getting the short end of the stick. We're going to get beat, and that's just the reality of things. But don't do ridiculous things. Do things that are effective. Do things that will, in the long term, teach those other legislators that they don't want to cross you. But don't give your enemies the video proof that you're a moron.
Exactly.
All right, Miguel. It was good to talk to you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, brother.
Get more Miguel Gonzalez Daily at gunfreezone.net. Fun with headlines. What do you got this week?
So, Sean, have you heard about that school that did that stupid thing where they said, hey, why don't we all just bring a can of beans and use that against school shooters?
God, that was so stupid. What were they thinking?
I know. What? Oh, wait. That's actually part of a program that was developed by a police officer after Columbine.
Beaning people with cans of bean was...
Yes.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this one to me.
So it's ALICE training, which stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Evacuate. Basically, this is part of their counter piece, which basically the aim of it is to throw off an attacker. Now, I'm not incredibly familiar with the school portion of this, but my employer does something that's a lot like this on the enterprise level. So it's, you know, run away. If you can't run away, hide. And if you can't hide, fight.
Right. Well, heck, that was the Department of Homeland Security did that, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a way for a bunch of 10-year-olds to fight. It's probably a pretty good idea. I don't know for this particular school system if it's a good idea anymore, because part of the reason to do it would be to throw off your attacker. But now that everybody in the country knows that this school system is doing it, probably not as going to be as effective.
You sent me this link. I was reading it, and it was really interesting what the police officer said, the guy that started it up. Apparently, his wife was a teacher, and it says here, you know, what are you guys doing while the police are heading to the school? Oh, well, we just sit there and do nothing.
Yeah.
Like, well, no kidding. I wonder why everybody's getting murdered just sitting there being all passive. Why don't you, like hit him with a book or something? One of the funniest stories I've ever heard out of, you know, force-on-force training was... one of those gun schools that has a training facility where it's like a school, and they're teaching police officers how to stack up and how to go in as a team back when it was like the 4-man entry for school shooters. And they said, well, what could students do? And they all sat in the desks and they had somebody put on a red man suit and they're like, well, throw some books at them or, you know, whatever comes to mind. So they started throwing books at them. And they ran it a second time, and they started throwing desks at him, and that was the last time they did because the dude in the red man suit was in serious danger of getting killed, right? And it's just a bunch of guys were like, well, screw it, rah, and threw a desk at him. Like, whoa, stop, this has gone too far. But that's the biggest problem that I have with the lockdown drills, because what do they teach people to do? Sit passively and let somebody murder you.
Yeah, thankfully we're seeing that trend is reversing somewhat.
Yes, and I think is very, very interesting in this case, what's going to happen to a bunch of students who were taught at the age of 5 and 6 and 7 that until the cops get there, you're on your own and you're just going to have to do the best you can. They're going to grow up to be adults who are going to say, until the cops get there, I'm just going to have to do the best I can. And what can I carry? That's a whole lot better than a can of beans to do the best I can with.
Exactly.
They're building future gunnies, and they don't even know it.
Warms my heart.
It does, doesn't it?
So this is actually a feel-good story, not a what-are-they-thinking story.
So yeah, so stop mocking this school for the can of beans thing. They're trying to do the best thing they can for their students, and they're going to swell our ranks in 15 years.
That's right.
Well, Baron wants to talk to us about leap seconds. I mean, extra second in a day. How could that possibly be a problem? In
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips with the Baron. Baron, I just saw a story about they're going to add a leap second on June 30th. They're acting like this is some big Y2K level technological red alert. But I remember Y2K, and it really wasn't that big of a problem. They're just blowing this all out of proportion, right?
Yes and no. Think of it in terms of daylight savings in the fall. You repeat the same hour over again. But unlike daylight savings, though, there isn't a time slice to contain the data. Everything's shifted back in the spring. Well, the problem is the computer is expecting a linear flow of time. And every second should be a new second. And some people have done this in a less ingenious method, such as repeating the 59th second. So now all of a sudden, when you go back, you have things that have happened in the future. The computer doesn't know how to deal with that. It actually really confuses it and screws it up. The other method is you add a 60th second. So you're still progressing through time. But ultimately, what is really going on here and the real problem is we're trying to make a computer conform and live around what we as humans want to do and interact with. Computers actually keep track of time primarily in what's referred to as Unix epoch time, which starts January 1st, 1970 at midnight. And there's a 32-bit number, and it increments every second.
Let me see if I understand this. You're just saying that every second is just another number, and they don't think of it as like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up?
That's correct.
Well, that's really simple.
It is. It is unbelievably simple. The problem is a lot of people, when writing their software, take that Unix epoch time, convert it into a human-readable format like you or I would deal with, where you have hours, minutes, seconds, and then they do something with it mathematically. So you've now introduced error into the calculations. So if, for example, you add a leap second, you're now going to have odd behavior regarding what time it is.
Well, why don't they just tell it to use the Unix epoch time?
For one reason or another, when people are speccing out a lot of their stuff, they worry about dates that in the end really don't matter. What matters is, are you in the future or are you in the past? For example, bank transactions. All you care about is the bank transaction that just occurred. You want to know when it happened, but you also want to know it wasn't in the future, because that would be a clue that it's fraudulent.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Well, okay, now remember what I just said, though. You repeat the 59th second over again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
So you have room for problems here, and there are numerous other issues when you talk about the power grid, for example. The power grid, there are protection algorithms that require significant timekeeping on both sides. Basically, they're using the GPS network for highly accurate time. We're talking down to the microsecond. And all of a sudden, you're now adding an extra second into this. Luckily, when they created the specifications and standards for doing all of this, the guys who wrote it actually took leap seconds into account. There's a nice section on how to deal with it. The people, though, who actually implemented all of this may or may not have actually bothered to read that section. Is the sky going to fall? Probably not, because of a leap second. There are definitely problems that can happen. Most corner cases have been dealt with. The Gizmodo article that you sent me talks about navigation and how there could possibly be navigational problems due to it. Your navigational computers are not going to freak out about this, because they have already been tested and gone through this numerous times. There's been, 26 leap seconds?
Yeah, this would be like the 26th, according to the story.
This isn't exactly a new occurrence, but there are new services that exist that maybe didn't exist at the last time there was a leap second. For example, last leap second took down Reddit and a couple other different websites because their servers couldn't handle it. And different companies actually have different methods for dealing with it. The other interesting thing is remember Y2K?
Well, yeah, of course I remember it. Didn't really happen. I mean, it's like whoop-de-doo.
That's right. And there were a few systems that did have issues, but they were quickly and easily dealt with. But the entertaining thing is, remember how I was talking about Unix epoch time?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
There is a real Y2K, and it'll happen in January of 2038. Because Unix epoch time is kept in a 32-bit number, and so you have 32 binary digits to represent time.
Oh, I guess if I knew the math, you could figure out that eventually you run out of numbers, right?
Exactly. You're going to run out of numbers, and you will roll over.
And suddenly it's 1970 again?
Yes. Got your bell-bottoms?
I don't think I wore bell-bottoms even then. In 1970, I was born in 1969, December 23rd. I was 8 days old on that day, on Unix epoch time.
You probably have like a little onesie bell-bottoms.
Oh, that's my mom. I probably don't fit him anymore. I'm too fat and too tall.
But yeah, that's actually the real concern. And the entertaining part is no one really talks about it. And I know, given systems the way they're run today, there's going to be a bunch of legacy stuff still in operation come 2038.
Oh, we've talked about that. They use the legacy systems until they flat fall apart, don't they?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Oh, Lord. All right, Perrin, it was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Perrin still blogs at the-minuteman.org. You've heard about Liam Neeson trashing the gun culture in America, haven't you?
Yeah, you mean the guy who makes all of his money shooting people?
Yeah.
In movies?
Everybody's like, oh, what a hypocrite, what a hypocrite. You know what? I think you guys are looking at this all wrong. Liam Neeson on Charlie Hebdo and gun control in the U.S. This is Gulf News. This is where it was first reported. Dateline Dubai. Liam Neeson might be brandishing a gun on posters of Taken 3 all around town, but in light of the recent Charlie Hebdo attacks in France and ongoing protests against police brutality in America, the actor told Tabloid he's still firmly in favor of gun control. There's too many expletive deleted guns out there, he continued. Especially in America. I think the population is like 320 million? There's over 300 million guns privately owned in America, and I think that's a expletive deleted disgrace. Every week now, we're picking up a newspaper and seeing yet another few kids have been killed in schools. I can't find any video of him saying this, so I'm guessing he like was given a face-to-face interview with this magazine or something. I keep hearing that he said it at the press conference for the Dubai Film Awards or something like that. I watched that press conference and he didn't say that there. So I don't know where this is, but okay, whatever. And I know the first thing everybody wants to do is say, oh, you're a hypocrite because you use guns in a movie and you don't like guns. And, you know, I can kind of see that. The other bunch of people, of course, everybody's reaching for Jennifer Haast's Dance Monkey. If you haven't read that, absolutely read that. There's a link to that in the show notes. You know, Dance Monkey, you're just a dancing monkey. That's all you are. You're there to entertain me. Nobody put you there for your brains. Nobody put you there for you to say anything profound. Just dance like the monkey you are.
You get paid for reading things that other people wrote for you and doing things that other people tell you to do.
Exactly. But see, let's look at the cause of this foolishness. Liam Neeson grew up in Northern Ireland under British rule. Now, back in the midst of time, any British subject could have a handgun, they could have a rifle, they could have a shotgun, nobody cared. Back in the early 1900s, I mean, literally, there were like no laws. Like, you could have whatever you wanted. But the Irish Revolution, World War I, the British government panicked. They were a little bit weirded by things. If you ever want to read about an interesting year in history, 1848 is your year. Read 1848. Find out all the crap that happened in 1848. You will understand a lot about the way European governments just clamped down. Every government in Europe, with the exception, I think, of Russia and England, got overthrown in like 1848.
Huh.
Well, we get to World War I, and the Russians, they have their entire royal family murdered and thrown down a well, I guess.
Yeah.
This kind of panicked everybody. And there were a lot of socialists in a lot of countries. And what did the British do? They immediately said, hey, we need to disarm these socialists because they might come gunning for us. And it's not enough that we're going to take their guns away. We've got to do something cultural. And they went out of their way to make exactly what's that guy in America who said, what we need to do to guns, the same thing we did to cigarettes, make them dirty, deadly, and banned. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, the British government has run BBC since there was a BBC, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they took it over fairly quickly after it started. Do you think they were putting out anti-government propaganda on the BBC?
No.
Probably not. Liam Neeson has been propagandized to since the day he was born. He can't think any other way. I know you all want to call him a coward and a hypocritical fool, but a much better response is just shake your head. And in the tone of deepest sympathy, say, poor Liam Neeson. He's been propagandized to by the British Crown for so long that he's unable to think any other way. The British political leaders want subjects, so they socialize them to be subjects. And he's just having trouble, now that he's an American citizen, adapting to being a citizen instead of a subject. Poor, poor Liam Neeson.
I like his movies, most of the time.
Yeah, well, let's face it. He reads other people's words very well.
Yes, he does. He has a very good agent. Here, Liam, read this.
Well, Weird wants to talk to us today about the anti-gunners finally weighing in on the Paris terrorist murders in this week in anti-gun nuttery. Weird, after every high-profile shooting in America, before the blood is even dry, we're treated to a parade of anti-gunners telling us that time has come to give up our guns and be just a little bit more like Western Europe. You troll the anti-gun internets. What are they saying about the Paris terror attacks?
Well, to be honest, not a whole heck of a lot. I mean, as a general rule, anytime there's a high-profile shooting, everything lights up like a Christmas tree. Everyone wants to jump in and say something about it, but really, there's not a whole heck of a lot of anything from a lot of the usual suspects. But I was fortunate enough to find two who did want to talk about it. The first one I want to touch on is Joan Peterson.
Oh, dear.
I'm not going to quote her. The link's in the show notes if you want to read her whole thing, but there was no way that I could get this down to our normal length by just reading her out loud. But essentially, she starts talking about recent terrorist attacks around the world. And she talks about the attack in India, the attack in Canada, Norway, as well as the Beltway snipers in the United States. I noted she failed to mention the Sydney, Australia attack. One thing about this is I noticed that one of these attacks are not like the others.
Yeah, the Beltway sniper attack, not even remotely the same as, you know, India, Canada, Norway, or Australia, the one she didn't mention. They weren't even done the same way.
Yeah, no, those attacks were all head-on frontal assaults. They were conducted quickly and brutally. And the U.S. sniper attack was done over a number of months, and they made a lot of care to make sure that they were not discovered while they were doing the shooting. Then she starts talking about the terror watch list in the United States, but she seems to have little interest on what a terrible system it is. There's a lack of verification that any person may or may not be on the list, or how it could have even stopped any of these attacks.
Yeah, I've never understood why people are so excited about this double secret probation list. These are people who are like, any excuse to take your gun away is a good excuse, no matter how stupid, no matter how lacking in due process of law, they don't care. Any way to take your gun away is a good way.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, first up, they don't even mention the sheer number of, you know, false positives of people that are not terrorists or even remotely, or the number of actual terrorists that aren't on the list. Or even after the fact, when they say, oh, so-and-so who committed this terrorist attack was on the terror watch list, how do we even know? There's no way to independently verify that. Next up, she also talks about the UN International Arms Treaty. Only the Norway shooter had a US-made gun. All these other people got them from other places on the black market. And how would this have even stopped any of these attacks?
I'm not sure that she knows herself.
No, it's something that's anti-gun, and so therefore she likes it. So next up, I've got the National Gun Victims Action Council. You even heard of these guys, Sean?
Oh, of course I've heard of them. They're the only people that are less important to the everyday life of gun owners than Joan Peterson is.
Yeah.
These are people that make Ladd Everett look like a mover and shaker.
That is true, but you know what? Elliot Fineman was able to dive in and touch on this one. Now, again, he's talking about all these international attacks, but not attacks that are happening in the United States. Yet U.S. gun laws are to blame somehow.
Yeah.
And then I've got a quote here. Other examples of insane U.S. gun laws include gun manufacturers being the only consumer industry exempted from liability lawsuits, guns not being required to be registered or their owners licensed, and no background checks conducted for gun shows and private sales. Well, it's just foolishness. I mean, first up, the gun makers are exempted from lawsuits the same way as everybody else is. I mean, you don't see someone suing Ford because someone hit him with a drunk driver or backed over your cat. And again, if Smith & Wesson decides to send out a gun that's completely defective and blows up in your face, oh yeah, you can sue him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, all these things on background checks and licensing and registration, how would this stop terrorists?
Well, doesn't France have licensing and registration and, like, ban AKs?
I think you're getting on why the anti-gunners don't want to talk about this.
Oh, you know, maybe that's it right there.
Plus, they had an RPG with them from all I've been reading.
I heard that. I don't know if they... I don't know where that came into play. But yeah, I know I can totally buy an RPG down at the gun show with no background check.
Joan Peterson said you could, but that's for another show.
Oh, Lord.
Another interesting side of this is now it's starting to get journalists to talk about how they feel about carrying guns.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah, I've got this Washington Examiner article. Overall, it's kind of all over the map, but I did pull out one quote from the end. Dan Armstrong, a New York-based researcher from Forbes and The Economist, disagreed, saying, "Yes, a handgun is no match for a Kalashnikov, but it's probably better than being unarmed, especially if the handgun is concealed from the person wielding the Kalashnikov. A confrontation could go either way, and I imagine most of us will pick the outcome that matches our pre-existing viewpoint."
I have noticed that every time we end up having one of these discussions, people who would ordinarily not think about guns and not think about defending themselves, it facilitates them actually thinking about it for once. They have to honestly take a look at the situation and say, do I really want to be completely unarmed? How much worse could the situation be if I had a gun? The situation couldn't get any worse. I'm about to get shot. And like they say, The possibility of a hanging in the morning concentrates the mind wonderfully.
It also, I think it gets to, I think a lot of journalists are talking about other people for most of their career, and so they never actually think of, could it happen to me?
That's true. And in this case, that's the only people it happened to. All right, Weird, it was good to talk to you. See you again next week.
Awesome. Talk to you later, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host at The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Yeah, one of the things that Weird mentioned in there was about buying grenades and machine guns at gun shows.
Yeah. Every dumb anti-gun, oh, you can buy a grenade and machine guns.
Exactly, right?
Because that's totally legal.
So about the time that the assault weapons ban was sunsetting, I was a baby gunny, right? I maybe had a pistol, but I did kind of understand what was an automatic weapon and what wasn't an automatic weapon. And I was on an internet forum and some guy made some comment about, you know, you can buy grenades and machine guns at gun shows. And so I was just like, oh, really? Well, I'll tell you what. You go and you find a gun show where I can buy a grenade. I will fly to you. I will rent a car. I will go and pick you up at your house. We'll go to the gun show. We'll buy a grenade. And then you can hold it the whole time, right? Or if you're too nervous, I can hold it. And then we'll drive to the ATF office. You can turn it in. And then I will write you a check for $1,000. He got real excited and was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. Never heard back from him.
Unsurprisingly.
I don't know if he knew that he didn't know what he was talking about or if he went out and actually went to a gun show and now owns the, you know, 15 AR-15s? I don't know.
Speaking of stupid crap, people say.
Oh, man.
Stuff that grinds my gears.
This is a good one.
Yeah, apparently it's so good that you're going to share it with me and not come up with your own, huh?
Exactly. You and I can both talk on this one.
Stupid Yankees that talk down to us Southern folk because we freak out over a couple of snow flurries.
Now, aren't you from Pennsylvania?
No, I'm originally from Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
I did live in Pennsylvania for a little while.
Okay.
But I moved to the South when I was 20 years old.
Oh, yeah. So
I'm 45.
You're a Southerner.
So yeah, I guess I'm not a Yankee anymore, I guess, because, of course, I'm from California. I was never a Yankee to begin with. But I guess technically I'm a damn Yankee because I stayed. I don't know.
Yeah.
In any case, I'm from Los Angeles. But I've been here long enough to really be irritated with these people. Especially having watched that idiot video where 107 cars piled into each other at high speeds on a highway in a snowstorm like a week and a half ago, right? You saw that?
Yes. Yeah. There's also the video from Boston from, I don't know, 2 years ago when they had an actual ice storm instead of a snowstorm. And they're just, you know, playing bumper cars all down the high or all down the surface street. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. If you guys are going to mock the way we drive when it snows, you really shouldn't have 107 car pileups on the freaking highway where people are slamming into each other at freeway speeds because I'm not going to slow down. Yeah, there's a good plan. Now, you guys just don't seem to understand. We don't have snow down here. We have ice storms. And when you have an ice storm, this isn't like, oh, we get a little dusting and oh my God, we can't drive. No, we get like a quarter of an inch of ice on every freaking flat surface, whether it's your roof, your tree, your house, your sidewalk, everything covered in ice, your car too. And now you attempt to drive at 2 miles an hour and not slide off into the ditch. But worse than that is every single thing has ice on it and it collapses onto the road. It collapses onto the power lines. You wouldn't believe the mess they made out of my neighborhood. When they went through here, it was like a malignant cross between Paul Bunyan and Freddy Krueger, what they did to these trees. They chopped trees down chopped them all down.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy because the ice hits these trees and it falls down on top of the power lines and nobody has power.
Yep.
And it does it region-wide. You've got half the state has lined down because trees fell on them. We don't freak out over a couple of flurries of snow. We freak out over the quarter to half an inch of ice on every flat surface.
Yeah, and the way that that happens is we'll get rain, right? Mm-hmm. And it'll be 35 degrees. And it'll rain, and it'll rain, and it'll rain. And then the sun goes down. And then all that rain, it goes down to, you know, like 24 degrees overnight. And you wake up first thing in the morning, and there's ice everywhere.
Everywhere. Like walk out to walk the dog and you fall down the driveway.
Yes, exactly.
And it's not that steep a driveway.
Right. I mean, you just, you know, go out on your front steps and just
boom.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that can happen is, you know, they'll be like misty, right? It'll be like a misty fog. And then that will freeze.
That freezes to every freaking surface. I mean, like, you can't even get into your car because it's like, it seals your car shut. All the water leaks into it and like all your doors are locked shut.
I keep a can of de-icer in the office, not in the car, in the office. Because one time, probably 7 or 8 years ago, we had one of these misting ice things happen and I could not open my car door.
I've been there.
I couldn't. I ended up having to stay at the office overnight because of an issue that I was working. And when I came out the next morning at 7 a.m., my car was frozen. Well, it was Saturday morning. Nobody else was at the office. I had to wait until 10 a.m. for my car to unfreeze itself.
Yeah. There's about a 3-degree difference between cold, rainy, and miserable, and the world has come to a complete and frozen end.
Yes.
And we all panic. Oh, this is going to be bad. Oh, well, it didn't get down quite cold enough tonight. That's great. You know, no big deal. That's what happened like last night. It's like water everywhere and it's going to freeze. Oh, no, it didn't. And I went out, walked the dog. No big deal.
In the early season, they may or may not actually send out the salt trucks because we don't get all that much snow, right?
Yeah.
So we can't salt every time there's rain in the forecast.
It all wash away and kill all the plants on the side of the road.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, will they salt when they know it's going to be 20 degrees outside?
Yeah.
Will they salt when it might be 30? It depends.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah. And do we have a complete fleet of ice plowing, snow plowing trucks?
Absolutely not.
No. Why would you? The same exact reason that, you know, the people in Montana don't have hurricane plans.
Exactly.
So all you Yankees, and having lived in the South long enough, I can start calling you Yankees, got some smack to talk about how we act in the winter. Well, you know, fix your own house and stop driving so fast in the snowstorms and cause 107 car pileups.
No kidding.
I mean, seriously, even Floridians aren't that dumb. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com and hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com. Show notes can be found at GunblogVarietyCast.com/episode 22. We'll be right back.